Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 495, Follow the Money, update on 9/11, being recorded on January 16th of the year 2005. Remember, sister station WFMU, archiving the For the Record shows on Real Audio, recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, that's one word, Dave Emery, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older shows available for download only, also on Real Audio at a longer URL, linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfireliz.com. Spitfire stocks CDs of all the lectures and programs I've done over the years, long, annotated, written, article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows in the For the Record section, descriptions of the other shows and lectures, links to various websites, including... There are two websites accessible through the Spitfire website with Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available on both PDF and now HTML as well. There's also a search function on the Spitfire website. We're going to continue following the September 11th money trail again when Woodward and Bernstein were investigating the Watergate affair. Their source, codename Deep Throat, told them, follow the money. And sadly, the 9/11 money trail has been a badly overlooked aspect of that case, yet it's the most important. And we're going to take a look at that money trail right now. Remember that it was actually Osama bin Laden's financial capabilities that boosted him to the position of primacy that he enjoyed within the Afghan Mujahideen movement, and that was what led to his ascension to the top of Al-Qaeda. Reviewing very briefly from a book that we've looked at before, it's called Blood from Stones, subtitled The Secret Financial Network of Terror by Washington Post journalist Douglas Farah. The book was published by Broadway Books in hardcover, and it's about the September 11th money trail, among other things. In the introduction to the book, we read, years before the September 11th attacks on New York and Washington, Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda organization and other terrorist groups had systematically built financial networks capable of sustaining their aim of bringing their war to the United States on its own soil. Indeed, bin Laden initially rose to prominence not as a fighter, but as the most influential financier of the Mujahideen fighting to drive the Soviet army out of Afghanistan. Bear in mind, of course, he is also part of one of the most powerful and wealthy families in the Middle East, and also, not incidentally, a family that is involved in a number of joint business enterprises with the Bush family. Continuing, quote, it is this financial architecture that continued with him when he turned to terrorism, and it's this financial architecture that is at the heart of how Al-Qaeda today gets its finances, unquote, said William E. Wexler, who specialized in tracking terrorist funding while at the National Security Council during the last 2 years of the Clinton administration. When bin Laden was given sanctuary by the Taliban in Afghanistan in 1996, he was able to use his Rolodex to solicit funds while building a stable base of operations. Within a few years, the Al-Qaeda money trail stretched from the tropical diamond fields of West Africa to the gold markets of the United Arab Emirates, from the money merchants of Pakistan to the suburbs of Washington, D.C. The melding of the financial resources with the control of a country made Al-Qaeda a terrorist organization without here. And it's this money trail that leads in so many different directions, from the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East to the Republican Party in the United States, backward in time to elements associated with the Third Reich, to overt Third Reich operatives like Francois Janoux, to so-called neo-Nazis running through the Ahmed Huber NPD National Alliance connection. And among other places, the 9/11 money trail leads through the Saudi power elite and their connections to the American power elite to the Riggs Bank. In past discussion of the Riggs Bank, we've noted that one of the directors of that bank was Jonathan Bush, George W.'s uncle, and that that bank is being investigated because of accounts belonging to various Saudi personages that appear to have been involved in some of the 9/11 machinations. One of the people who apparently was deeply involved with the Riggs Bank because of his long-standing and well-documented involvement not only with the CIA, but in particular with many of the covert operations that were being undertaken in the 1980s and early 90s by the Reagan-Bush administration, when the elder George Bush himself, a former director of the CIA, was overseeing many of these most important operations, including the Contra War, the Iranian arms transfers, the Iraq Gate transfers, and also the Afghan Mujahideen support effort. all of those have strong areas of overlap in such places as the BCCI. And the Riggs Bank figures in that. Prince Bandar, nicknamed by some Bandar Bush because of his very, very close relationship with the Bush family, Prince Bandar is involved with the Riggs Bank as well. One of the least recognized superb journalists in this country is Glenn R. Simpson of the Wall Street Journal. The toxic nature of the Wall Street Journal's editorial pages notwithstanding, that paper is worth reading if for no other reason the occasional article that appears by Glenn R. Simpson, who's been doing some fantastic work investigating the money trail to September 11th. There was a characteristically incisive article by Glenn R. Simpson, largely overlooked, sadly, also characteristically, in the Wall Street Journal's last issue of 2004, this from Friday, December 31st of 2004. This article is Dateline Washington, again, by Glenn R. Simpson, headlined, Riggs Bank had long-standing link to the CIA. Subtitled, Ties May Pose Challenges for Prosecutors Investigating Money Laundering at the bank. Skipping down, speaking of Prince Bandar of the Saudi royal family, the Saudi ambassador to the U.S., his relationship with the CIA and with Riggs Bank, and bear in mind, though it's not mentioned here, his very, very close relationship with the Bush family, discussed, by the way, and among other places, House of Bush, House of Saud, by Craig Unger, a fine recently released book. Of Prince Bandar, the CIA, covert operations, and the Riggs Bank, we read, skipping down, Prince Bandar's connections to the CIA have long been a significant, albeit little discussed, aspect of the Riggs affair. During the initial phase of the controversy over Saudi accounts at Riggs in early 2003, Prince Bandar detailed his work for the CIA in a meeting with Treasury Secretary John Snow, according to current and former U.S. intelligence officials who interpreted the disclosure as an explanation for the prince's large, unexplained cash transactions at Riggs. The meeting took place at the Treasury Department's headquarters on Pennsylvania Avenue, which is across the street from Riggs' headquarters. A spokesman for Prince Bandar declined to comment on the specifics of the discussions with Mr. Snow, as did the Treasury Department. During the 1980s, Prince Bandar helped fund the anti-communist Nicaraguan Contra rebels at the request of the White House and CIA, and later helped support Afghan rebels fighting the Soviet Union. More recently, he helped broker a diplomatic rapprochement between the U.S. and Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. So again, quote, Bandar Bush, unquote, and his connections with Riggs Bank, CIA, and his deep involvement in covert operations of the 1980s and 90s, which not only overlapped each other, which overlapped the Bush family, which overlapped the world of criminal activity, and which also overlapped the elements which were to coalesce into Al-Qaeda. That is one of the sticky wickets in the entire September 11th investigation, and the money trail in particular. Another great article by Glenn R. Simpson appeared in the Wall Street Journal of October 18th of 2004. One of the things we've spoken about at great length, in for my money, the most important aspect of September 11th, that is Operation Green Quest. That was the task force in charge with investigating the September 11th money trail. Its most successful effort was the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, which busted a number of Islamic businesses and charities and individuals in the Washington Beltway area, individuals and institutions that had strong connections to the GOP, that overlapped the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, links to people like Grover Norquist, Talat Atman, a close Bush aide and business partner. Norquist's Islamic Institute represents an actual hard area of intersection between the Republican Party and the Muslim Brotherhood, the parent organization of Al-Qaeda. On April 4th of 2002, Bush aide and business partner Talat Atman interceded on behalf of the individuals and institutions busted on March 20th, 2 weeks before. He interceded with Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who was then replaced X number of months later. Operation Green Quest has been deep-sixed by the Justice Department and the FBI in particular. The FBI, headed up by former U.S. Attorney Robert Mueller, Mueller, who was, shall we say, less than vigorous in his investigation of the BCCI milieu. BCCI's connections represent something of a foundational element for the events of September 11th, as we've seen so many times, BCCI at the epicenter of the world of covert operations, the covertistan, I guess one could say, that was run by the Reagan-Bush administrations in the 1980s and 90s. And Robert Mueller was less than vigorous in his investigation of the BCCI case. I speculated when he was appointed that, in fact, it was his less than vigorous investigation of BCCI which got him appointed to head of the FBI, because then he would be less than vigorous in his investigation, should it be necessary, of the connections, the business links between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens. The number two attorney in that less than vigorous federal investigation of BCCI, Rudy Giuliani, Rudy the Rock. And as we've seen in our discussion of Operation Green Quest, it is being deep-sixed, just as I had predicted when Mueller was appointed as head of the FBI. I predicted that he would obscure any links pointing in the direction of the operational connections between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens in business and covert operations. Just such a thing has happened. Another article by Glenn R. Simpson about the 911 money trail and dealing with Operation Green Quest, the task force that was in charge with investigating the September 11th money trail, and which has been badly attenuated, virtually derailed, we read as follows. This is in the Wall Street Journal of October 18th, 2004. Now, in dealing with Operation Green Quest and the 9/11 money trail, there is absolutely no way that I can do justice to all of the different evidentiary tributaries leading into and out of this particular concatenation. Please take advantage of the written descriptions to these shows. When the written description for 495 is up on the web, which it will be in about within 2 weeks, I'll say, at the www.spitfirelist.com, there will be supplemental information that will help to flesh out listeners' understanding of the Operation Green Quest investigation and the various evidentiary tributaries leading into and out of that investigation. One of the people who represents a link between the Muslim Brotherhood, the milieu of Al-Qaeda, and the GOP, and a person principally involved in the Operation Green Quest investigation, is one of Republican operative Grover Norquist's clients, Abdurrahman Alamoudi. Glenn R. Simpson has written about this in the Wall Street Journal of October 18, 2004. Article, Terror Finance Suspects Face Prison. It reads in part, two key figures in a government probe of alleged terror financing in the U.S. likely face long prison stints after last week. Muslim leader Abdurrahman Alamoudi, once a prominent lobbyist for Islamic causes, received a 23-year sentence for violating terrorism sanctions against Libya. Solomon Beharry, who managed money for a top Hamas leader as well as Mr. Alamoudi, was convicted of immigration fraud and lying about his ties to the Palestinian terrorist group. Skipping down. With his guilty plea, Mr. Alamoudi promised to cooperate with the Justice Department, but the decision by prosecutors to proceed with sentencing indicates he has yet to give anything they consider useful. If that changes, Mr. Alamoudi can apply for a reduction in his sentence. Prosecutors also were working to extend the prison time of Solomon Beharry, 53, who has been locked up since June of 2003 on a variety of lesser charges. A jury last week convicted Mr. Beharry of lying to Federal Immigration and Customs Agent David Kane during a June 2003 interview regarding his relationship to Musa Abu Marzouk, one of the top figures in Hamas. A judge threw out one charge of lying about his ties to another alleged terrorist leader, while Mr. Beharry entered a guilty plea to a charge of passport fraud shortly before his trial on the Hamas allegation began. The founder of BMI Incorporated, an Islamic investment firm that went bankrupt 4 years ago amid allegations of fraud, Mr. Beharry has acknowledged extensive dealings with numerous top Muslim Brotherhood figures, officials say. His convictions carry a sentence of as long as 15 years, and prosecutors want to add so-called terrorism enhancement that could boost it by an additional 10 years. This last paragraph I'm going to read here is a reference to Operation Green Quest and the raids of March 20th, 2002, historic raids, sadly overlooked. And again, in the written description, I'll give people links to other programs and their descriptions and supplemental information about this consummately important investigation. The last paragraph reads, The government wants the two men to cooperate in a continuing probe of a network of Islamic organizations centered in Herndon, Virginia, and founded by top U.S. leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. The group, which received its original funding from wealthy Islamists in the Middle East and has millions of dollars in assets, is under investigation for tax fraud and racketeering, as well as possible ties to terrorism. And again, you start investigating that Operation Green Quest milieu that got busted on March 20th of 2002, and you have some very, very, very interesting things indeed. So again, another magnificent article from Glenn R. Simpson. By the way, BMI was one of the companies that helped to fund PTEC. PTEC was the company in Massachusetts that was developing the threat assessment software architecture for the FAA and the U.S. Air Force. And basically, it was, for all practical purposes, an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and Al-Taqwa. It should not, therefore, appear all that surprising that the behavior of air defense units on September 11th was rather capricious. Again, at least one of the factors that would have entered in there is the fact that this threat assessment software was made, for all intents and purposes, by Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa. So, surprise, surprise, that things didn't work too well. Now, yet another element of the investigation into the September 11th money trail that we've talked about in the past concerns not only the Bank Al-Taqwa, that is the Muslim Brotherhood Bank headed up by former Third Reich intelligence agent Yosef Nada. Nada, by the way, was in the United States in 1979 through 1984, and along with another Al-Taqwa principal, fathered five children in the U.S. at that time. I think it's a pretty safe bet that his presence in the United States in the Beltway area of Washington, D.C. was in order to raise money for the Afghan Mujahideen effort, and that placed him right in the center of the milieu, obviously, of Osama bin Laden, and also of the Muslim Brotherhood Bank Al-Taqwa, and what I call the Underground Reich as it extends outward. We've spoken in the past about a San Diego investor named Anthony Elgindy. He's been under investigation for a number of criminal allegations, and as we looked at in For the Record 361, one of the possibilities there concerns allegations of foreknowledge of September 11th. These have been firmly denied by Mr. Elgindy and associates, and the investigation into that has been attenuated very badly. It turns out, however, that not only were his FBI inside informants informing him of things that were related to the stock market, they also were informing him about the September 11th investigation. Again, For the Record 361 goes into this. And once again, that investigation leads out in the direction of the Islamic Institute, Yosef Nada, Osama bin Laden, Talat Adman, etc., etc. L.A. Times, January 5th of 2005, had an AP story headlined, Ex-FBI Agent Admits He Gave Tips. It's about the Elgindy situation. First two paragraphs read as follows. A former FBI agent admitted that he gave online stock traders confidential deals of federal investigations, including a probe of the September 11th terrorist attacks. One of the recipients was San Diego penny stock picker Anthony Elgindy, E-L-G-I-N-D-Y. Elgindy was investigated by a Justice Department task force examining whether anyone might have known of the terrorist plans and profited by selling vulnerable stocks just before the attacks, Jeffrey Royer said. Still more about the Elgindy situation, and again we talked about that in For the Record 361. This concerns not only the performance of some of his assets leading up to September 11th, but also the fact that he made some significant contributions to his favorite charity, which was Mercy International. That is an Islamic charity that not only appears to have been giving money to Osama bin Laden, but was also a derivative of the all-important Bank Al-Taqwa, the financial network of the Muslim Brotherhood, and headed up by former Third Reich intelligence agent Yosef Nada. The following is from the New York Times of November 9th of 2004, article by Eric Dash, headline, Judge in Stock Advisor's Trial Bars Testimony on Terrorism. This reads in part as follows. For 5 days, jurors have seen dozens of email messages, a litany of internet chat room logs, and countless company reports as federal prosecutors presented their conspiracy case against Anthony Elgindy, the San Diego stock advisor accused of obtaining illegal information from an FBI agent to manipulate the stock market. but they will not hear evidence supporting an assertion that prosecutors once made, suggesting that Mr. Elgundy might have had advanced knowledge of the September 11th terrorist attacks, a judge said yesterday. The matter came up in the fourth full day of testimony in United States District Court in Brooklyn. Derek Cleveland, a former business associate of Mr. Elgundy, who is now a government witness, was asked by an assistant United States attorney, Kenneth Breen, about a mid-September 2001 FBI investigation into Mr. Elgundy. When Mr. Cleveland responded that the investigation was related to, quote, terrorism, unquote, Judge Raymond J. Deary brought the hearing to a halt. Quote, "This case has nothing to do with terrorism," he said to the jury in a planned set of instructions. Quote, "You will hear no evidence that Mr. Elgundy or others were involved in 9/11, unquote. Mr. Cleveland was allowed to continue with his testimony, recounting how he learned that Mr. Elgundy was a subject in a criminal investigation. Mr. Cleveland said that Jeffrey A. Royer, an FBI agent, parenthetically, who we now know was communicating information to Elgundy about the September 11th investigation, who was the source of that information and a defendant in the case, told him that investigators were looking into $6 million that Mr. Elgundy had liquidated from two brokerage companies, Charles Schwab and Solomon Smith Barney, shortly before September 11th. So again, $6 million liquidated shortly before September 11th. Continuing, Mr. Royer also relayed information that the government was examining the money Mr. Elgundy gave to Mercy International, which Mr. Breen described as a Middle Eastern charity. This, I'm sure, refers to the September 11th investigation that was alluded to in the LA Times article. Mercy International, as we've seen in past broadcasts, is an offshoot of Bank Altaqua, and that was Mr. Elgundy's favorite charity. Reviewing some information from the book Dollars for Terror, the United States and Islam, we looked at this in, among other broadcasts, for the record 389, about Mercy International. The Milanese connection originates in the Bahamas. Since leaving its first head office in Nassau, Altaqua established itself at NIGH, Nasruddin International Group Holdings, 10 D Wall Street in Nassau. The NIGH holding company deserves close attention. Youssef Nada's assistant, Ali Galeb Himat, works there. The Bank of Gotard is NIGH's bank through account CCB number 313656 through the agency of Chiasso in the name of a charity foundation. The Bank of Gotard, or the Banco del Gotardo, also appears in a confidential report on Altaqua's activity under the heading of Business Connections. The bank manager at Gotard, Claudio Generari, told me, however, that he does not know either Altaqua or its director, much less the holding company, NIGH. The president and creator of NIGH, Nasruddin Ahmed Idris, who also appears on the list of the first shareholders in Altaqua, is Honorary Counsel of Kuwait in Milan. Skipping down. One of them, Gulf Office, Association for Commercial, Industrial, and Tourist Development between the Gulf States and Switzerland, currently dormant, had been housed in the same building as the Mosque of Lugano. In 1994, the Italian judicial system had its sight on Gulf Office and conducted an inquiry into its activities in the context of the Operation Clean Hands. But Nasruddin Ahmed Idris's real representative at the head of Gulf Office is another member of the Muslim Brothers, Khaldun Dia Eddin, who belongs to the Syrian branch of the organization. He, too, was employed by the Bank Altaqua, which he represented in Lugano, before he took on the coordination of the activities of Mercy International, an Islamic humanitarian organization. The humanitarian organizations, Islamic non-governmental organizations, NGOs, represent one of the other derivative products from Altaqua Bank. Skipping down. Today, 1999, Mercy International has moved its headquarters to the United States. It declares a gross budget of $2 million, and that was the favorite charity, so to speak, of Anthony Elgundy, who liquidated $6 million just before September 11th. A number of our past investigations, including our discussion of the Clearstream Network, which featured 16 unregistered accounts by SECO, the Saudi investment company, the Bin Laden family's holding company that oversees their European investments. In connection with the Clearstream Network, we've taken a look at SECO's connections to the September 11th investigation. Of SECO and the renewal, the expansion of a French probe into SECO's operations. And by the way, there there are many evidentiary tributaries running between SECO and the investigation of the September 11th money trail and other aspects of September 11th. I will put some of those connections into the description for the record 495, because we just don't have time. Again, the French investigation into SECO and Yaslam bin Laden has widened. This is a story from Reuters. It's dateline December 25th, 2004, dateline Paris. French magistrate widens bin Laden finance probe, and it reads in part as follows. A French judge has widened a probe into the financial network surrounding the family of Osama bin Laden after questioning his half-brother and learning of a 241 million euro transfer to Pakistan, Le Monde Daily said. Investigating magistrate Renaud Van Rombeek received court authorization to extend his investigation after Yaslam bin Laden was questioned on September 27th over allegations of links with organizers of attacks in 2001 in the United States, the paper said in its Saturday edition. As a result, Van Rombeek was, quote, adding other instances of money laundering, unquote, to the probe already underway, Le Monde said. The court was unreachable for comment on Saturday. On December 5, 2001, French authorities opened an investigation into financial transfers carried out through Paris between firms grouped with the Saudi Investment Company, or SECO, run by Yaslam bin Laden, who also manages some assets of the family's Saudi bin Laden group. Yaslam bin Laden was questioned by the French judge in 2002 and has handed over a copy of documents detailing the distribution of the bin Laden family wealth to 54 brothers and sisters after the death of their father in 1967, the paper said. Although he denied having had any contact with his half-brother for the past 20 years, the paper said, documents held by Swiss banking authorities suggest that Yaslam and Osama bin Laden held a joint account in Switzerland between 1990 and 97, according to Jean-Charles Brizal, a private investigator hired by families of the victims of the September 11th attacks. Yaslam told French investigators in September that he had omitted to mention the existence of that account, while still insisting that he had not mixed with his half-brother, Le Monde said. Yaslam bin Laden's Swiss-based lawyer Pierre Dupreux could not immediately be reached by Reuters for comment, skipping down. The French authorities, however, say the facts require further checking. Brizard notified Van Rombeek on September 6th this year of several suspicious funds transfers, Le Monde said. The investigator noted a 241 million euro transfer made to Pakistan in 2000 from an account belonging to a company called Cambridge, an SBG subsidiary that was opened at Deutsche Bank in Geneva, the paper added. U.S. authorities are aware of the existence of those funds, which they believe were transferred into an account belonging jointly to Osama bin Laden and someone of Pakistani nationality, it said. The French authorities say the presence of SECO within the Saudi bin Laden group's orbit in Geneva justifies its probe, according to Le Monde. Well, again, SECO was training pilots at Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, through one of its aviation subsidiaries. SECO had 16 unpublished accounts open in the spring of 2001 with the Clearstream Network, owned, by the way, by the Deutsche Börse, the German stock exchange, controlled by the major German commercial banks. And I would note that the co-chairman of the board of SECO for many years and a current board member is none other than Baudin Dunant, who was a friend of, attorney for, and protege for François Genoux, one of the most important Odessa operatives, a man moving around not only Nazi war criminals but Third Reich monies in the post-war period, and the heir to both the Last Will and Testament and the literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And in emails to me, Ernest Bacchus, one of the founders of the Clearstream Network, indicated that François Genoux was the individual to whom he referred when he talked about a Swiss organization, i.e. Al-Taqwa, that he believed was connected to the stock speculation in September 11th and where the funds for September 11th would turn out to have derived from. And again, Al-Taqwa was the institution in which Al-Qaeda had all of its traceable monies after September 11th, founded, according to Bacchus, by a man who was the heir to the literary works and the Last Will and Testament of Hitler, Bormann, and Goebbels. Something to think about. That concludes For the Record 495. Follow the Money and update on September 11th, being recorded on January 16th, 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.